Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwen Sheltimer, and our guest this week, John B. Lee. Each week, we visit with an author who has regional or local connections. We hope to find out a little about his life, what prompts him to write, and give him an opportunity to read some of his work for us. We're very pleased to have John with us today. Welcome, John. John B. Lee has had a distinguished career as a poet. He has published over 55 books of poetry, as well as numerous chapbooks, books of essays, and edited many collections of both poetry and prose. He wrote his first poem when he was 8, a present for Father's Day, entitled To a Fried, which his father kept until his dying day. At 21, he published his first book of poetry, which was named as one of the best 10 poetry books published that year by the National Library Journal of Canada. Not surprising, then, that John has collected over 70 international awards for his poetry and multiple ones from organisations in Canada since then. He's been writer in residence at several universities and in 2005 was appointed Poet Laureate in Perpetuity by the City of Brantford, as well as being awarded an honorary life membership of the Canadian Poetry Association that same year. Poetry is a serious business, and he regards writing it as his calling, and therefore works as a full-time author at his home in Port Dover. So, John, people have such different approaches to writing, even poets to poetry. Can you tell us a little about how you set about writing a poem?
I look for the first line to occur to me. I prefer it that I have no idea what I'm going to write and no idea what I'm going to write about. I once said to somebody when they were talking about what they had to say, and I don't think they understood my answer, I said, I have nothing to say. I've never had anything to say. It's not about saying anything, it's about discovery. It's about the kind of deep thinking that we do can disappear into your intuitive, and you surprise yourself by the realization that you know things that you didn't know that you knew. So that's what I'm after, that's what I'm chasing, and sometimes, a recent poem is very fresh in my mind. So I just finished reading the novel by Harper Lee, and that has so many profoundly mind-changing phrases in it that make you think about, that shake your understanding of the South into a new perspective. It's almost like somebody has taken a puzzle that is set and has just shivered it a little, just enough to say, oh, that's the way it was. I always thought it used to be that way. And so to begin with, I'm in that frame of mind, and it's good to be in a certain frame of mind. And then the next thing you know, I went and sat and found my copy of Browning, and I read Child Harold, To the Dark Tower Came, by Browning, because she mentions it, Harper Lee mentions it a couple of times, but she doesn't really quote from it. So I thought, I want to go read that poem again. And I sat down in my study, and I read it 3 times, because the first time through, there were a lot of things I didn't get. And the second time through, those things shivered into place. And the third time through, I started thinking about burdock, because he mentions burdock. And, you know your world. So I live on a cliff, and on the cliff going down to the lake, we tried cultivating the cliff by clearing it off, and we had a guy come and sow it with barley, and then sow it with something else, and sow it with something else, and that was 2 summers ago, and now it's all burdock and goldenrod and Aaron's rod, poor man's tobacco, nettles, and it's all these other wild plants. So I thought of the first line of the poem, and that's a sure sign that I better get down to business. So I wrote the first line and just followed it where it would lead me, and it ended up, a poem that I thought was going to be about burdock ended about being about memory, self-identity, and my relationship with my mother, which is much on my mind nowadays because my mother is 89 and she's one of those unfortunate people who has suffered from Alzheimer's, which means her life is being erased and she's become another person. So that's how the poem ended, on identity and mother and so on. And I think one of the reasons why it went that way was because there's so much in the book that I started to think about, which is Go Set a Watchman, about Jean Louise and her relationship with her environment and her relationship with the South and the place from which she came. But there's also a lot about how she is the way she is because she is the daughter of that family. Mm-hmm. And my mother is the only one of two women left from either side of my parents' family. So I got thinking about family and Atticus Finch and Scout and how who she is and her relationship with her father. And that all invaded and took my original inclination elsewhere. So in a long-winded way, how do I work? I surrender. I start with an inspiration and then I give in. And when it's going well, I'm just keeping up.
That's a wonderful explanation. It's a terrific poem.
Well, thank
you.
And
I would like you to read it right now.
Okay, I would be happy to read that poem right now. What then? Today, the broadleaf burdock thickens on the cliff beside the lake. Dark shadow of its underleaf stains at the sloping surface clay like blood in cloth. And as the fellow thickens in the stalk and muscles every green sinew, the cocklebur buds, at first a gentle fur, a purple moment in the sun, and then it spikes the air as it matures, it bristles brown. Somewhere the Velcro dreamer plucks at his troubled dog, his poor old tail and coat all baned with tangled pricks to find a winter purpose for an autumn day. I look along the fall and see the Aaron's rod, a nettle patch that occupies its itch of wind, a goldenrod enough to prove the bunch gall's symbiosis for the fly too fat for golden wings. The crown vetch blooms like attic veils, and time's acculturation kills the pampered hill gone wild, just as the lake beyond upwells a chill to murder multitudes of shad, where algae blooms hang tattered rags, and water toxins on the rocks to dry. The gray worm spindles to the deck like a straying button knotted to a thread come loose. But then am I to think to love the world, the same that steals my aging mother thought by thought until I name a stranger called myself.
It's a very moving poem.
Well, so many of us are going through that journey. And I've had the advantage of several poet friends who have written books about their own parents in the past when I didn't realize that that was part of my journey. So.
True. Okay, so I'm going to ask you one more question. You said that you read as a child and read as an adult the great poets of the past. I'll quote from an interview you gave some years ago. When I was quite young, and this remains true to this day, I began reading poetry which took my breath away. I read Shakespeare, Dylan Thomas, T.S. Eliot, Robert Frost, Emily Dickinson, and on. And whenever I read a great poem, I was inspired to wish to do that. What poets inspire you today?
Recently, I've read books by friends. So I read a book by a friend of mine, Don Gutteridge, who was a teacher of mine back in the day. So Don Gutteridge, I read his book, and his poetry is so entirely different from mine, but I absolutely loved it. The beautiful simplicity of his language, and he's dealing with a lot of the same things that I'm dealing with now, but he's dealing with them 10 years on, because he's dealing with some of the loss of personal strength, the loss of the future that I will have to look forward to, because he's looking at mortality not as an abstraction. He's starting to look at it as a possibility for his own particular incarnation, and he's losing contemporaries. He's losing friends that he went to elementary school with, and so he's thinking back on those days and so on. So I read his book, and he inspired me to write him a letter and say how much I loved his book. Glenn Sorstad, who's a poet laureate of Saskatchewan, is also a friend, and he sent me a book. And similarly, you get this maturing that I have to look forward to. And the thing that's consoling about reading contemporaries who are contemporaries in one sense, but in another sense are maybe 10, 20 years older than I am, and still alive and still vital and still writing, is it makes you realize that those of us who are blessed to live a long life are blessed to learn things, know things, let things go that were important when we were 60. But also, I'm rereading Molly Peacock.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm rereading a book that I found on the shelf, and now I'm reading it slower, and I'm going and looking things up that I didn't look up for some reason the first time I went through, and I find it inspiring. So she wrote a poem in which she used the word living stone, and I don't know why I didn't look that up. And so I looked up living stones, and there's all kinds of images of them, and now in my mind I have the filter of what I really is a living stone, just like somebody knows what a daffodil looks like and they read Wordsworth, but if you're from somewhere where they don't grow daffodils, how do you know what that poem's about, really? So Molly Peacock is somebody I'm reading right now, and I'm realizing, oh, she's got a really different imagination. So the list is really long. But I'm reading all the time and taking inspiration from people, especially people who write differently and think differently.
Please read to us now, John.
Okay, I'll read a poem that I read on CBC the other day. It's a poem from The Full Measure called Wild Mushrooms. I did not trust my bachelor uncle's knowledge, an expert of puffballs, mushrooms, and morels, though he was master of the forest floor's swamp water spring. He'd park his truck and cross the over-silvered mirror of the ditch without a splash, then slog the algae-verdant mire that broke its blanket to a ward through ankle green to find the sacred hold, the fairy circle of his appetite. My mother's fragrant kitchen afterwards a sizzle with the pan's perfume, macadam black, the full, pure midnight color of old and much-used motor oil. I would not eat the stuff for toadstool's poisoned fear, though now I live in that regret. Some say the cities make us smart, where live the star-starved children of neon nights. Let's to the library. Let's to the zoo. Let's to the urban park where squat trees thrive. Let's to the cold cathedrals with this worm in the font. There we built the madhouse. There we built the mall. There we built the ash heaps of the poor. I see my uncle's knowledge in his working hands, his gritty palms, the spore and gill, and now I thrill to know the earth receives us like a winking of a dusted eye. And we are rich with seeing, like the wind within these words, become the breath that bends the sun-gold wheat, the light we all must sleep to dream.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. That's from my book, The Full Measure, which is just out from Black Moss. It's the 6410 book, which means it's 64 pages of poetry at $10 a pop, published by Black Moss Press.
And thank you. Now we'll take a short break.